Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Nothing seasonal about jump in Midland's jobless rate, by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. September was a rough month for Texas labor markets, as all 26 of the Texas Workforce Commission's metropolitan statistical areas saw higher rates. The Midland MSA, which includes Midland and Martin counties, reported an unemployment rate of 9.6%, up from 8% in August and 7.5% in September. Odessa saw an even steeper increase, jumping to 13% from 11% in August, 10.5% above the MSA saw a year ago. The city has reported the state's highest unemployment for four consecutive months. I was trying to see if this was a seasonal rise, but there was nothing seasonal about it, said Willie Taylor, chief executive officer of the Commission's Workforce Solutions Permian Basin office, in a phone interview. There was nothing seasonal about it. Obviously, it was layoffs. He said, given the impact of the region from the oil market crash and the COVID-19 pandemic, the numbers aren't too bad, and Midland Odessa is holding its own. Midland's civilian labor force fell by about 1,200 to 105,000 in September, while the number of employed Midlanders fell by just over 2,700. I always emphasize, if you see the workforce is 105,000 and employed is 95,000, the participation rate is not too bad. He said the number of first-time employment claims filed in his offices have declined to about 2,500 a month, from highs of 14 to 15,000 seen in March, April, and May. Taylor said board members have told him there are signs of increased activity in construction, manufacturing, and trucking. Taylor has words of caution for those filing claims or receiving unemployment. The commission announced last week it is reinstating its work search requirements. We're urging all unemployment insurance claimants to start looking for work, so we should see more people looking for work, he said. He also warned claimants that their benefits eventually will run out. We're reaching out to hundreds of claimants to get their classrooms and training. At some point, hundreds of claimants will run out of extensions by the end of December. If Congress does approve more stimulus, it won't be until after the election. The past few months have emphasized the needs to continue attempts to diversify the region's economy. It makes good sense. Noting that economic development groups are working on development projects, he said hopefully some will come to fruition soon. What a difference a year has made, he said, to go from 2.1% to 9.6%. The impact of oil and gas here is phenomenal. Yet, he said, the region keeps trucking along. We'll come out of this and we'll come out of it real strong. Midland's total non-farm job count has plunged during the downturn, falling 200 jobs from August to September. As expected, Midland's dominant industrial sector, mining, logging, and construction, which includes oil and gas, was the hardest hit, plunging 10,500 jobs from September 2019 to September 2020. The sector was the only one to lose jobs from August to September. The professional and business services and the government sectors were the only ones to add jobs from August to September. Each sector added 100 jobs. All other sectors were unchanged. The professional and business sector is the only one to add jobs during the last year. It gained 100 jobs. The trade, transportation, and utility sector, Midland's second largest in terms of jobs, lost 1,600 jobs over the last 12 months. It was followed by leisure and hospitality, down 1,000 jobs. The other services sector lost 800 jobs. Education and health services lost 400 jobs. The financial activities sector lost 300, and the manufacturing sector lost 200. The information and government sectors each lost 100. Statewide, the unemployment rate rose from 8.3% to 7% in August. The state added 40,700 jobs during the month, the fifth month job increase, and well above the 12,800 jobs added in September. Amarillo had the lowest unemployment rate at 5.1%, followed by College Station Bryan and Abilene. Local and state news. City reports fifth straight week of increased COVID cases by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstMP.com. The Midland Health Department reported the most coronavirus cases in 1 week inside Midland County going back to mid-August. The health department reported 268 cases, which marked the third straight week with more than 200 cases, and also the highest number of cases going back to August 9th. Another thing to note in the weekly case report is that this is the fifth straight weekly increase going back to September 6th, when cases bottomed out at 79. The health department reported Friday that the overall case count during the pandemic rose to 4,444. Also, three more Midland County residents died of COVID-19-related issues last week. That was the highest number of deaths in a week since September 13th, when there were four. The number of coronavirus deaths inside the county since the beginning of the pandemic has increased to 88. Lastly, the health department reported 1,475 active cases and 2,646 recoveries. Airport passengers dropped to lowest number in more than a decade, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstMP.com. The airport report for Midland International for fiscal year 2020 showed the least number of airline passengers leaving Midland in at least a decade. The passenger count not only dropped by nearly 250,000 compared to fiscal year 19, but a total number of passengers was less than any year going back to 2010. Coronavirus and an oil industry downturn during the last 6 months of fiscal year sent the year-over-year numbers dropping by more than 80% at one point in the spring. The city reported in September a 51% decrease in the number of passengers boarding either American Eagle, Southwest, or United Airlines. The September report showed an improvement compared to August, as the decline was 58.6% in August. The September report was additional proof of how slow the airline recovery could be. A Dallas Morning News report this past week stated airplane manufacturers and analysts are painting a bleak picture for 2021, and that the International Air Transportation Association said it doesn't expect cash burn for the global industry won't stop until at least 2022. It also quoted an analyst as estimating that airline revenues will be down 44% by the end of next year. Hopes for a robust holiday flying season are diminishing as airlines slash holiday travel schedules. It could be spring break, nearly 6 months from now, before airlines truly see whether passengers come back in large numbers. Southwest again led all carriers in Midland with about 43% of the traffic in September. Southwest's share of the market was around 46%. American Eagle had about 30% of the passengers in September. Fuel sales also have shown similar improvements in recent months, but remain down year over year. In September, the decline compared to 2019 was 47%, the first time during the downturn that the percentage drop was less than 50. It was similar for parking revenues. The percentage decline in September was 50%, which was fractionally better than August. That drop was more than 70% in the spring. Oil Patch leads nation in apartment rent decline during the pandemic, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstMP.com. Nowhere was the drop in rent during the pandemic felt more than inside the oil patch, according to a report from InSurfy.com, a home insurance comparison site. The report states the three communities with the three largest percentage decreases in monthly rent were Odessa, Williston, North Dakota, and Midland. The website showed a 26% decrease in rent in Odessa from March through September, and a 21% decrease in Midland. They were the only cities showing a decrease of 20% or more during that time. San Francisco and Mountain View, California rounded out the top five. Odessa and Midland were the only two Texas cities in the top 20. There were 10 California cities that made the top 20, and nine of those 10 cities are clustered in the Bay Area region. The website also reported average two-bedroom apartment rents of $728 and $912 in Odessa and Midland in September. Year-over-year rent in Odessa dropped 34%. In Midland, the rent decrease was 29%. The report also showed the change in rent between March and September across the nation was 0.06%, and that the mean rent for a two-bedroom unit in September was $1,106. The average year-over-price change in rent was minus 1.4%. Rent estimates for each city include studio and 1 to 4 bedroom units, so analysts took the average of the combined units' relative percentage changes to determine each city's overall change over time. Obituaries and death notices. Jerry Howard Adams, 73, passed away on July 16th in Midland due to complications from COPD. A family memorial service will be held at a later date. If desired, a donation to the charity of your choice would be nice. Teddy Paul Cannon, 73, of Odessa, passed away on October 13th at his home in Odessa. Funeral services will be on Thursday, October 22nd at 11 a.m. in the American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home. Lisa Bess Brian Angel, 81, of Houston, passed into heaven October 6th at her home after a brief illness. The family has asked that, in lieu of flowers, any memorials be sent to the Connell House, care of Martin County Museum, Box 929, Stanton. Linda generously willed her body to the Baylor College of Medicine, Houston. Her memorial is postponed.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, October 18th, 2020. OPD makes arrest in connection with stabbing. Odessa police have made an arrest in connection with a stabbing that occurred early Saturday morning in central Odessa, the OPD said in a press release. According to the release, Jesus Cervantes has been charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. The release stated that at approximately 3:25 a.m., the Odessa Police Department and Odessa Fire Rescue responded to the 1900 block of East 6th in reference to a stab victim. Upon arrival, officers made contact with a 44-year-old male who sustained a stab wound to the upper body. Investigation revealed that after the 44-year-old victim got into an argument with his brother-in-law, identified as Cervantes, Cervantes stabbed his brother-in-law and fled the scene before police arrived. The victim was transported to a local hospital with life-threatening injuries. According to the press release, Cervantes was later located and interviewed by detectives, and that based on the facts and circumstances presented during the investigation, OPD detectives obtained a warrant for Cervantes, who was charged and arrested accordingly and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. Local news roundup. Scarecrow decorating contest. The Ector County Library Children's Department, 321 West 5th, has scheduled Decorate the Scarecrow contest through October 23rd. Kids, middle grade children, teens, and adults are invited to decorate a scarecrow like their favorite book character. Participants may drop off their decorated scarecrow entries October 1st through 23rd at the library. Entry forms and patterns are available on the third floor. Entry deadline is noon, October 23rd. Final judging will be conducted on the same day. Contest rules are: scarecrows should represent a favorite book character. On the entry form, the title and author of the book must be included. Do not write your name anywhere on your scarecrow. Entry form number will be recorded with participant's name when scarecrow is entered by returning it to the children's department on the third floor. All designs must be family friendly. This is a home project. Design size is limited to the size of the pattern, and use products to decorate that are safe for everyone. Scarecrows will be judged according to the following categories, and prizes will be awarded in each category: kids ages 4 through 7, middle grade 8 through 12, teens 13 through 18, and adults 18 plus. Winners will be announced live on an Ector County Facebook event at 4 p.m. October 26th. All scarecrows must be picked up by November 2nd. For more information, call 332-2118 or visit ector.lib.tx.us. Live concert. Next night's live music and comedy will present live in concert Pat Green with opener comedian Darren Streblow Thursday at the Bush Convention Center, 105 North Main in Midland. Doors open at 6 p.m. and dinner starts at 6:30 p.m. VIP tables for six people include dinner from the barn door and two drinks of choice. Tickets start at $99 and limited to 900 total. For tickets or more information, visit tinyurl.com/y4wd4psu.
This is Michael reading an additional article from the Odessa American, Sunday, October 18th. Texas allows social workers to deny LGBTQ and disabled clients. The Associated Press, Austin. Texas officials are facing backlash after deciding to allow social workers to turn away clients on the basis of their disability, sexual orientation, or gender identity. At the direction of the governor's office, the Texas State Board of Social Work Examiners voted unanimously to eliminate disability, sexual orientation, and gender identity from the non-discrimination clause of the Code of Conduct. The board made the decision during a joint meeting Monday with the Texas Behavioral Health Executive Council, which oversees regulatory agencies for professions related to mental health. The National Association of Social Workers criticized the board's decision to follow the governor's recommendation rather than seek public comment. Will Francis, director of the association's Texas chapter, told the board during public comments that their decision was incredibly disheartening. Abbott's office said the change was made simply to align the rules with the state's occupations code, which determines how and when the state may discipline social workers. It's not surprising that a board would align its rules with statutes passed by the legislature, said Renee Ease, spokeswoman for Abbott's office. Francis said the board's decision creates the impression that people with disabilities can be discriminated against, despite federal rules that are in place to protect them. It's disturbing, even if it's unintentional, Francis said. They created space for people to get the impression that this is allowed now. What the governor has done is put people with disabilities at risk for discrimination for no reason. Seven advocacy groups, including Equality Texas, Transgender Education Network of Texas, and Texas Freedom Network, released a joint statement Thursday decrying the board's move. Pro-discrimination groups couldn't get this passed into law, Texas Freedom Network President Kathy Miller said it in the release. But Governor Abbott has done their bidding by pushing it through administratively in an obscure meeting when he thought few people were watching. Gloria Canseco, presiding officer of the Behavioral Health Council, said topics related to gender and gender identity would be revisited during a council meeting this month. She did not indicate whether the decision to remove protections for people with disabilities would be revisited.
Obituaries and death notices for Sunday, October 18th. Teddy Cannon. Teddy Paul Cannon, 73, of Odessa, passed away October 13th. He was born May 11th, 1947, to Paul and Letty Jean Trulock Cannon in Paducah. He is survived by his daughter, Letitia K. Cannon of Santa Fe, New Mexico, three grandchildren and one great-grandchild, two siblings, Timmy Cannon and family of Odessa, and Becky Henson and family. He is preceded in death by his son, Cody Paul Cannon, and his companion, Carla Walters. Funeral services will be Thursday, October 22nd, at 11 a.m. in the American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. John Duncan Jensen. John Duncan Jensen, 88, of Odessa, passed away Tuesday, October 13th at Medical Center Hospital. He was born in Lindsay, Oklahoma, December 3rd, 1931, to the late William Vance Jensen and Margaret Marie Martin. He married Bobby Grimm in 1953, and they were married for 41 years before her passing in 1995. John is survived by his two sons, John Duncan Jensen Jr. and wife Sherry of Fairfield, California, and Robert Andrew Jensen and husband Larry of Bryan College Station, and daughter Catherine Marie Scott and husband Kenneth. He is also survived by several nieces, nephews, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. John is preceded in death by his wife, Roberta Bobby Ann Jensen, his mother and stepfather, Margaret and Ralph Martin, his father, William Vance Jensen, brother William Vance Jensen Jr., half-brother Victor Jensen, half-sister Verlina Jensen, and numerous aunts, uncles, nieces, nephews, and cousins. Visitation was held Sunday, October 18th, and will be held Monday, October 19th from 4:30 to 8:30 p.m. at Frank W. Wilson Funeral Directors. Funeral services will be in the Frank W. Wilson Chapel Tuesday, October 20th at 1 p.m., followed by interment with military honors at Sunset Memorial Gardens. In lieu of flowers, the family wishes you to consider making a memorial donation in John Jensen's honor to the American Alzheimer's Association. Betty Louise Dodson Freeman. Betty Louise Dodson Freeman, 93, passed away Wednesday, October 14th. She was born December 16th, 1926, in Wichita Falls, to John and Fay Murphy Dodson. She was preceded in death by her parents, John Dodson and Fay Pruitt, her husband, Bobby Joe Freeman, sisters Ina Starnes and Fay Sanders, and a brother, Ray Pruitt. Betty is survived by her four children, daughter Geraldine Bird and husband Wayne, son Richard Freeman and wife Lanice, daughter Sandy Williams Coe, son Ralph Fuque and wife Ginny. She is survived by one sister, Gloria Rolfing of Baltimore, Maryland, seven grandchildren, and 15 great-grandchildren. Graveside services will be held at Sunset Memorial Gardens Thursday, October 22nd at 10 a.m. In lieu of flowers, please make donations to the West Texas Food Bank. Services are entrusted to Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Harry Edward Susan. Harry Edward Susan passed away October 14th in Odessa. He is survived by his wife of 47 years, Beverly, daughter Danielle Picklepuss Susan, and fiancé Gerald Fliffitt of Odessa, son Donnie Scooter Susan, and his wife Krista of Odessa, daughter Carrie Ann Gutierrez and husband Mike of Midland, and one son Dusty Susan of Odessa. He's also survived by six grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his brother, Henry, Hank, Susan, and his wife, Angie of Weatherford, his father, Byron Susan, and mother, Ethel Susan of Weatherford. He is also survived by a sister, Elizabeth Wright, and husband, Tom of Weatherford, and a nephew and a niece. The family will receive friends for visitation Tuesday, October 20th from 4 to 8 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Funeral services will be Wednesday, October 21st at 2 p.m. at Sherwood Church of Christ. Death notices. Jose Oncon Quezada. Jose Oncon Quezada, 76, of Odessa, died Tuesday, October 13th. A chapel Service is scheduled for 10 a.m. October 21st at Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory Chapel. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. A visitation will be held Tuesday, October 20th from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Martinez Funeral Home Chapel. Randy Joe Harris. Randy Joe Harris, 67, died Friday, October 16th. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Glenn Hodges. Glenn Hodges, 70, of Fort Stockton, died Monday, October 12th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Heritage Funeral Home of Big Bend of Fort Stockton. Ramon Lavario. Ramon Lavario, 89, of Odessa, died Saturday, October 10th. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. October 20th at St. Anthony's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Father Tony is officiating. Arrangements are by Odessa Funeral Home. Connie Carlene Bolton Smith. Connie Carlene Bolton Smith, 78, of Odessa, died Wednesday, October 14th. A memorial service is scheduled for 4 p.m. Monday, October 19th at Stonegate Fellowship Church. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Lisa Driver, Midland. Lisa Driver, 52, died Friday, October 16th in Lubbock. Services are pending with Frank Wilson Funeral Home of Odessa.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Monday, October 19th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, "Parts of West Texas isolated from coronavirus. Four counties have fewer than five cases of COVID." By Adrian Hedden, Carlsbad Current Argus. Moselle Carr grew up in the city of Mentone, the only town in Loving County and the only community in the state that appears immune from the COVID-19 pandemic. She serves as clerk for both the county and its district courthouse and said that as a child she enjoyed the open spaces which stretched for miles. Most of the local children grow up riding horses and hunting hogs and pheasant. They join 4-H and play freely in the Pecos River. The roads in Mentone were just recently paved by the county, using money brought in from the recent oil boom. "It's like most of Texas, very friendly," Carr said. "You know everybody. If you live here a long time, you know all the families." That remoteness and far-flung nature of Mentone could be its saving grace amid the COVID-19 pandemic, Carr said. But with cases of the virus appearing to increase in counties surrounding the community, she said residents must remain vigilant to prevent the virus from taking over their idyllic rustic home. "We haven't had any cases reported here as of yet," Carr said. "That could change. There are reasons for it. We don't have a hospital." People in Loving County travel out of their community every day for food and other necessities, even during the global COVID-19 pandemic. Those who live in the community bordering New Mexico do not have their own grocery store, hospital, or school. The county is one of the U.S.'s least populated, with about 170 residents, and is one of Texas's smallest, spanning about 670 square miles. And while the county has not recorded any cases of COVID-19 from only seven tests since the pandemic struck the U.S. in March, the transient nature of the area could put it at risk for future outbreaks of the virus. Aside from shopping, education, and health care, the county also sees many oil and gas workers traveling in and out from other parts of Texas or even across the state lines to and from New Mexico to work throughout the Permian Basin. Other Texas counties. Three other counties in West Texas saw similar risks despite having fewer than five COVID-19 cases as of October 13th, throughout the almost 8 months of the pandemic. They all had populations of fewer than 1,000 people and share a similar culture to Loving County of inter-county and interstate travel to big box stores and other facilities in neighboring cities. King County, about 300 miles northeast of Loving County, reported just one case and 13 tests, According to data provided by state health officials, it has a population of 277 people in 913 square miles. About 177 miles northeast of Loving County, Borden County's numbers were identical to King County among its population of 648 people. In Terrell County, 220 miles southeast of Loving, with a population of 823, three cases were reported from 24 tests. The rural remote communities could face such low numbers because of low testing. Larger urban areas in West Texas saw positive case counts ranging from 75 cases in Culberson County, neighboring Loving, to more than 4,000 in Midland County and more than 14,000 in Lubbock County. State records show more than 58,000 COVID-19 tests were conducted in Lubbock County, while Midland had just 16,000 tests. And just over the border, cases are on the rise in New Mexico, which on Wednesday reported its highest ever statewide increase, 577. Eddy and Lee counties, known for heavy oil and gas operations and travel into West Texas, have regularly reported daily double-digit increases in COVID-19 cases throughout the summer and fall. Eddy and Lee have 1,064 and 1,684 cases respectively. Both counties are listed as red counties by New Mexico health officials, meaning they're under stricter regulations than other parts of the state, such as a ban on in-person school. Travel from at-risk states, including Texas, was restricted by New Mexico health officials, and those who choose to do so must quarantine for 14 days upon entering the state. Anton Lara, public information officer for the Texas Department of State Health Services, said the more rural areas pose less risk to residents being exposed to COVID-19 by their remote nature. But residents of all regions of the state should remain cautious, he said, and follow public health guidelines. These counties are very rural and likely have less opportunities for exposure than those in more densely populated areas, Lara said. We want all residents to be aware of the symptoms of COVID-19 and to follow all of the precautions like hand washing and wearing a mask around people who aren't in their household. No COVID-19 cases yet. Carr said that while no cases were recorded in the Loving County, an oilfield worker living in a nearby man camp was sent home to Colorado to quarantine after a positive test came back, and a Mentone resident who was attending college in Dallas later tested positive. A woman from Mentone previously was hospitalized in Dallas and recently was tested for the virus and was awaiting the results. Positive tests are attributed to counties in Texas based on the address on a patient's driver's license, and Carr worried the policy could fail to reflect where the person lives and could spread COVID-19. Most people living in Loving County are well spread out, she said, and spend most of their time working outside. They attend church outside of the county, which also doesn't have any bars or assisted living homes for seniors. The public school district in Loving County recently was consolidated with the district in Winkler County, and children are bused back and forth for classes. We don't have any places for people to gather, Carr said. We're wide open spaces out here. To keep the county's numbers low, the courthouse was closed to the public. Face masks are worn at public meetings, although the state of Texas does not require them in counties with fewer than 20 cases of COVID-19. Around town, mask wearing is mixed, Carr said, as many opt to forego face coverings intended to protect them and others spreading the virus. Some people just won't wear a mask. They will not, she said. We do practice social distancing, but I feel like we'll have more reports. Reports could increase in step with testing in Loving County, as a clinic built by local oil companies recently gained rapid testing capabilities along with a ventilator installed in an ambulance. Carr said she's heard that a second wave of the virus could be possible later this year and hope the community she's called home for more than 60 years will be vigilant. I've read about the Spanish flu and how it came in waves, Carr said. It could affect isolated towns like ours. It could happen to us if we let our guard down. Hopefully, they'll find a vaccine by then. As the county awaits a resolution to COVID-19, businesses sputtered at Mentone's only restaurant. Alba's was once packed all day as workers flowed in and out of town, which served as a crossroads for oil and gas workers while the industry boomed in the Permian last year. Cashier Nathalie Zapata said the pandemic struck. Traffic dwindled through the town. She said she commutes to Mentone from Pecos and back again every day and used to have to wait 30 minutes just to pull out onto the highway. Now her trip home is quicker, she said, but it came at a cost. The restaurant laid off one of its cooks and a prep cook, leaving Zapata and the chef as the restaurant's only employees. It's just been really slow. The traffic used to be so busy, she said. We haven't seen much lately. We were always very packed. We'd get stuck on the interstate trying to go home. Isolated from COVID-19. Jamie Green defied health officials from the beginning of the pandemic. She's never worn a face mask and said she never will. The sales clerk at the 6666 Supply House in Guthrie said she informed masked customers that they too may pass on wearing face coverings when they enter the general store, one of the few businesses in King County. King is one of four Texas counties with fewer than five cases of COVID-19 recorded since the pandemic hit Texas and the U.S. in March, and conducted just 13 tests since April. As the rest of the nation struggled to recover from the deadly virus while it spread from state to state, Green said it wasn't Guthrie's problem. Nobody did the social distancing, and it's been great, she said. We didn't panic and start freaking out. We just kept living life. You do the same precautions as you would with the flu. You wash your hands, and if you don't feel well, you stay home. Green said she travels to neighboring Childress County, which has a population of about 7,300 and 85 cases of COVID-19, to shop for groceries at the local Walmart, skipping bigger cities like Lubbock and Abilene, where she fears the dense populations could prove a greater risk. It's easy to avoid large urban crowds for people in Guthrie, Green said, as they don't need or want the trappings of big cities, which has come to include COVID-19. There's less than 300 people in the county. That probably makes a big difference, Green said. But I haven't worn a mask yet, and the only way I would is if I had a medical emergency. COVID-19 doesn't seem like a major issue to Jenny Merrifield either. She works at Uncle's of Sanderson, a general store that also serves at the local gas station. Sanderson is the county seat and the only official town in Terrell County. Merrifield said she hasn't seen anyone suffering from COVID-19 and the health crisis has not impacted her business at all. The pandemic could have even improved business as fewer locals travel out of the county and thus frequented Uncle's, Merrifield said. It's pretty much business as usual here, she said. We're pretty isolated from the rest of the country. The more crowded municipalities see higher case numbers, Merrifield said, due to a higher population density. Just like crime, she said. With more people, there would be more cases. The populations are denser, Merrifield said. More people, more cases. It's the same with crime. We don't really have any crime around here because there's not a lot of people. Even as Texas's most remote areas see lower COVID-19 numbers than the rest of the country, Merrifield wants the crisis to end and quell local fears that crept even into the isolated community despite a lack of cable TV and the rare internet connection. I think it's media-driven. I hope it ends soon, she said. People are frightened. I think we'd like for people to not be so scared. But with the pandemic worsening around these oases of country life, places like Mentone and Guthrie could soon be united with their big city counterparts in infection of COVID-19. What's at stake could be the way of life in Texas's tiny rural communities. Carr said Mentone was the perfect place to raise children, far from the stresses of the big cities. I was raised here. I had a great childhood. You can roam here forever, she said. Like most areas out here, West Texas was one of the last places to get coronavirus. It's clean living. This article is distributed by Tribune Content Agency.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, October 19th. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Hector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 5,613. Hector County negative, 24,828 out of 30,777 tested, with 336 pending, 108 deaths. Recovered, 4,663. Active cases, 842. Midland County, 4,397 confirmed cases with 88 deaths. Texas, 823,779 confirmed cases with 7,327,919 tested. Total Texas deaths, 17,014. U.S. cases, 8,382,209 total confirmed cases and 224,656 deaths. Find out more online at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Here are some Odessa American quick hits. Early voting continues through October 30th. The Hector County Courthouse Annex, 1010 East 8th Street, room 104. Early voting hours are scheduled from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., October 24th, 26th through 28th, 29th through 30th, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m., October 25th. Four other voting locations will take place from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. through Friday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., October 24th, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m., October 25th, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., October 26th through 28th, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., October 29th and 30th, at Kellis Turner Community Building, 2230 Sycamore Drive, Westlake Hardware Store, 4652 East University Boulevard, the Globe Theater at Odessa College, 2308 Shakespeare Road, and Salinas Community Building, 600 West Clement Street. So far in Hector County, 12,687 have voted. For sample ballots or more information, call 498-4030 or visit www.co.hector.tx.us/page/hector.elections.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing with articles from the Odessa American, Monday, October 19th. Local News Roundup. Exhibition. Ballroom Marfa, 108 East San Antonio Street, Marfa, has scheduled an outdoor exhibition, Unflagging, through January 21st, 2021. Eight artists created a flag accompanied by a sound-based work, and each work will be on view individually for 2 weeks, rotating from October to January. Artists include Lisa Alvarado, Pia Camille, Jeffrey Gibson, Byron Kim, Camila Jenan Rashid, Hank Willis Thomas, Nama Chazbar, and Cecilia Vicuña. For more information, call 432-729-3600, email info@ballroommarfa.org, or visit ballroommarfa.org. Fall Mixer. Misty Knight Coaching will present a fall mixer to celebrate National Business Women's Week from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Tuesday at Anthus, 4425 West Wadley Avenue, Midland. There will be networking, fun, and door prizes. Drinks and snacks will be provided. Visit facebook.com/events/9229482048 6909. Death Notices from the Odessa American, Monday, October 19th. Simon Lasalde Sr. Simon Lasalde Sr., 73, of Odessa, died Sunday, October 11th in Odessa. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, October 19th at Templo Casa del Afario. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. German Carrasco. German Carrasco, 10, died Thursday, October 15th in Odessa. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Should I receive the Shingrix vaccine? Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 55-year-old female who was recently hospitalized for a serious case of ocular shingles, although fortunately it did not invade the eyeball and my vision is intact. The shingles affected the left side of my face with severe migraines, eye pain, swelling, vomiting, fever, and weakness. Should I receive the Shingrix vaccine, and in what time frame? I read that after having shingles, one should wait 3 years to receive the vaccine. I am otherwise healthy with perfume scent-induced asthma. I wanted to receive the vaccine last year at my annual wellness exam, but my primary care physician advised me to wait. She wanted to see what long-term effects the vaccine would have. I do not ever want to go through this again. A.S. Answer. The new shingles vaccine, Shingrix, may be given as soon as the rash from shingles has crusted over, but the risk of developing a recurrence of shingles within a year of an outbreak is low. You can get it any time within that year. I understand that some doctors are reluctant to prescribe new treatments, but the data and years of experience with the Shingrix vaccine are convincing enough that I recommend it for everyone over 50 who does not have a medical reason not to take it. This is true for people who have had shingles before, as well as those who have not.
Dear Abby, Monday, October 19th. Widower dating again wants to leave the past in the past. Dear Abby, I'm 35 and have been a widower for almost 5 years. I began dating about 2 years ago. In my adventures of dating, I have encountered a lot of divorced moms. I met someone very special. I'll call her Rose. 1.5 years ago. She's great. We share lots of laughs and goals. But she does something that drives me crazy. She's constantly showing me Facebook memories and photos of her daughter when she was young. I never got the chance to have children and rarely bring up my past because I feel that's behind me. Rose's ex is toxic, according to her, and from what I've witnessed, he's pretty bad. I see her daughter 2 weeks out of the month. The girl is very spoiled and entitled, and when she's not around, Rose keeps shoving old photos of her in my face and asking, "Isn't she so cute?" I can't relate, and I don't care for her daughter. Does that make me a jerk? I feel those old photos of her daughter are really memories with her ex, and it would be just as bad if I showed her photos of my late wife and asked, "Isn't she beautiful?" Am I wrong? Unparent out west. Dear Unparent, if you plan to continue a relationship with Rose, you are going to have to deal with your feelings about her daughter, some of which may be off base. It is important that you communicate to her the connection you make when you see those photos. The quickest way to work this through would be couples counseling. If your description of the girl is accurate, then realize that as long as she's a minor, she will be a presence in your household. If you and her mother can't figure out a workable arrangement, you shouldn't waste any more of Rose's time or yours. Dear Abby, Ron, the guy my best friend Stella is seeing, is a manipulator. My mother was a pro at manipulating and gaslighting, something I recognized after going to therapy as an adult. I know it when I see it. A month ago, I told Stella what I have observed, and it has escalated to the point that I told her I no longer want to be around him. Ron, who is 40, throws tantrums and threatens to leave when he doesn't get what he wants. The last time I saw him was at a dinner Stella hosted. I left early after he threw another tantrum. Ron texted me an apology that did not address his behavior that night, but something else that happened a week ago. He then tried to guilt trip me by saying my walking out hurt our friends and that he would stop hanging around because he didn't want them to be hurt like that. I haven't responded to Ron's apology and haven't seen him since. I have seen Stella for lunch once since the incident. Must I accept his apology so everything goes back to how it was, or not see my friend until he is out of her life? Not a fan of him. Dear Not a Fan, you don't have to accept Ron's apology any more than you have to accept any other unappetizing gift that is offered. But don't stop seeing Stella. From what you have written, she needs a level-headed friend right now. If Ron acts up again in your presence, leave if he makes you uncomfortable. And while you're at it, tell Stella the reason and ask, woman to woman, why she tolerates his childish threats.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. A baby born today has a sun in Libra and a moon in Scorpio until 11:43 p.m., when the moon enters Sagittarius. Happy birthday for Monday, October 19, 2020. Independent, free-spirited, and outspoken, you create controversy this year, albeit very successful. In privacy, you produce your masterpiece. Sensitive to all that is around you, you may change your workspace or your living space. If single, you are too rebellious to be pushed into commitment this year, so you fly solo. If attached, you are bound to the hip with your partner. Sagittarius needs space to spread their wings. Aries, March 21 through April 19, 5 stars. An associate plans a surprise journey. It's a good day to make decisions. Your mind will be especially sharp and clear, motivating you to initiate a variety of projects that add dimension to your life. Tonight, a friend contacts you from another country. Taurus, April 20 through May 20, 3 stars. Today finds someone talking about new financial endeavors. This may impact your personal security. Creatures of habit is a term befitting those closest to you. Allow them to learn from the past and prepare to move forward. Tonight, family ties grow stronger. Gemini, May 21 through June 20, 4 stars. A new commitment, business or personal, is formed. Be observant. For better or worse, someone is not exactly as they first seem. You'll be guided by heightened intuition. Devote time to projecting your best image at work. Tonight, your curiosity is piqued. Cancer, June 21 through July 22, 4 stars. Today, your body will communicate which adjustments in lifestyle are needed to enhance strength. There is much you would like to learn and understand. Curb tendencies to overeat or indulge in foods that are too rich or spicy. Tonight, devote your evening to peaceful works. Leo, July 23 through August 22, 3 stars. There has been great evolution coupled with life-changing experiences as you've followed the quest for the perfect romance. Now opportunities for a lasting love with potential for growth abound. Tonight, celebrate with your sweetie or a close friend who understands. Virgo, August 23 through September 22, 3 stars. Today creates a stir in your family and home sector. It's a good time to do some space clearing, repainting, or house cleaning. Focus on problem-solving rather than expressing anger. Pursue new projects and advocations. Tonight, a long-lost family member contacts you. Libra, September 23 through October 22, 5 stars. Journeys related to work or education can be rewarding, and today brings a solution to transportation dilemmas. A bond with a neighbor or sibling strengthens. Your happy thoughts act as a magnet to draw support from others. Tonight, learn by listening carefully to conversations. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21, 2 stars. Sirius Saturn creates a reality check today. Live within your means. Be patient if you long for items that are costly. Be flexible and receptive to changes. It's a good day to restructure financial strategies. Tonight, indulge in an escapist book or film. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 5 stars. You're a cheerful seeker of enlightenment and experience. Keep competition upbeat and good humor today. Counteract the intensity of others with a little levity. A new connection and bright plans for the future exhilarate you. Tonight, dance like no one's watching. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 5 stars. You will cherish some privacy today. Revel in your solitude and begin a journal. Answers brought by self-reflection and dreams are preferable to the guidance offered by others. This process brings a new sense of identity. Tonight, releasing all that you've outgrown. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 4 stars. Today favors intense activity within groups and organizations. Your social and romantic prospects will blossom. Ambitious people become worthwhile models. It is a perfect time to pursue your creative work. Tonight, buy some new clothes for the new you. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 3 stars. Career matters reach important turning points. Explore options. Look within to discover what direction you truly want to take. Wait if you're considering a job change. It's just not the time now. Tonight, if you've been undecided, suddenly inspiration comes. Born today, novelist John Le Carré, 1931. Medium Sylvia Brown, 1936. Boxer Evander Holyfield, 1962.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.